This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of August 30th. I can't believe August is almost over. I'm John Gibson, and with me late on a Sunday night slash early on a Monday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Well, it is Monday morning already, and got a busy Monday ahead of me. I'm okay. I got a couple interviews Monday morning, so that's going to be busy.
Yeah, well, I'm only, not busy on the days that don't end in Y, to hang that double negative out there.
Okay.
So we're in it together. I'm going to have to miss a workout tomorrow because I'll be working on the podcast. So
that's like a blues song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Podcast,
yeah.
Blues, baby.
Blues and country music. Yeah, those things. Anyway, people, what do we say? Mask up and hunker down and all that stuff. And I got my second vaccine shot on Friday and suffered a little bit on Saturday, but just a little, not that bad, and headaches and all that stuff. But I was fine and worked out today, and I'm back to normal, I think.
That was quick.
Temperature's back to below, way below the norm in Japan, so I'm fine.
Okay.
So got that going for us. So please, if you guys have a chance to vaccinate, please do. On this week's show, we've got an explosive chat with Vladimir Coco Ballantin. He's the guest, and we're going to discuss the playoff races. We're going to look at some numbers that Jim has about the playoff races. Ma-kun and Roki Sasaki both pitched, and we've got a player coming up on 2,000 hits and more, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Tuesday night, I hooked up by phone with NPB single-season home run record holder Coco Ballantin of the SoftBank Hawks. He's in year 11 here in Japan, and he's in his second season with the SoftBank Hawks. And Coco set that home run record, 60 home runs in 2013 while he was with the Yakult Swallows. And he just turned 37 in July. And blah, blah, blah. You know, he hit a home run on this day, on Tuesday, in the day game, in a farm team game that he played earlier in the day. And then we talk at night. And when I called him, he said, "Oh, I'm watching a movie in Spanish." And many people... Many of you longtime listeners might remember that he speaks at least five languages. Papiamento, obviously English, Dutch. He speaks Spanish and Japanese. So he said he was watching a movie in Spanish. And I suppose he's got to, you got to keep all those languages sharp, right? I don't know how you can organize them in your head. It must be like a juggling clown or something like that in the circus. Not the clown reference, obviously. I mean, just someone who juggles in the circus, because I don't even know how to deal with the 2.5 languages that are in my head. But anyway, he hit home run number 300 earlier this season, and he received a placard and a short celebration as the team gave him a little bit of a ceremonious moment on the field after that home run. But I had been reaching out to talk to Coco for a while, and there were just no good days to talk. He was either busy traveling or whatever was happening in his life. And obviously things are going on in the players' lives outside of baseball as well. But we did find time on Tuesday. And I'll be honest, I stumbled into a really good question and picked a scab that is not even close to healing with him. So we ended up with some really hot steaming cocoa. So sit back and enjoy. All right, joining us this week is Coco Ballantin of the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. What's happening, man? It's good to hear your voice.
Hey, man, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me again on your show.
Oh, man, the pleasure is all ours. The pleasure is all ours. So how are you physically?
Physically, I'm doing good, man. Can't complain. I'm healthy. I'm swinging the bat well, so... Physical, I'm doing good.
All right. Now, I know the last time we talked to you, I asked you about the biggest difference between the Pacific League and the Central League. And probably that was your first year there. You didn't have as much knowledge as you do now. But
Now, after being in that league with that team, what differences have you really noticed?
I won't be able to tell you that I haven't seen any different, because nothing haven't changed since last year. So I haven't played last year I barely played. This year I only played like a couple of games again. It was against the summer league, so I can't really answer you that question because I didn't even have a chance to play.
Well, sure you can. You've still been playing against some of the guys, even on the farm team, you've been playing against those guys, and you've been seeing your teammates, you know, who are different from the other teammates you had.
I mean, in the minor league, we play a lot of National Sea League team, Nagoya, yeah. The Dragons,
yep.
The Carp,
Hanshin.
Tigers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the only Pacific team we play is Oryx.
Yeah. So. All right. What about the Hawks now? This year has been obviously much, much different for you. It seems like everyone except the manager and some of the coaches has gotten injured. So there's been a lot of change with the number of players who keep coming up. So what has that experience been like with you watching some of the other players go to the top team? And we only saw you a little bit in June, so... So, yeah, how has the season been going for you then?
Well, man, I can't complain, brother. I mean, I'm down here in the minor league having a great season. I have like almost, what, 9, 10 home runs and like 70 AB. So I'm swinging the bat good down here. But like I said, you know, I had an opportunity to show on the big team. And for all those guys... that my teammates that was down here and they got there and have a chance to play. I feel great and happy for them because, you know, they'd be grinding down here same as me. So to get the opportunity, I feel great for them.
Yeah, grinding is definitely how it goes. Now, you told me a few years back the Pacific League was going to be good for you because of the DH.
Yeah.
So how is that going?
Well, like I said, I mean, nothing changed. I mean, it was just bad timing, a bad signing, the wrong team, but what we can say, I mean, it's already done, so nothing I can do. Just have to keep playing out there, let other teams see that I'm still can swing the bat, and hopefully if I don't choose for my retire, I have another shot to show people that I'm still can hit.
Yeah, now, playing with the Hawks, I mean, you did go to at the time they were a three-time defending Japan Series champion when you went there, but how much did you think about that team having so much talent and you having to deal with that?
Well, basically, it's nothing to do with talent, you know, because when you come to the point, at my age, I have better talents than most of the players they have right now on the active roster, but it's all about for me though it was something that maybe I was not the likely guy they like, so probably, you know, when somebody don't like you, it's probably always you the one that have to move on, you know?
Right, yeah, I know that.
So I think that's the basic thing here. Probably the staff don't like my way, don't like how I am, or I don't know what's the deal. So, it is what it is, man. I mean, we almost over, so nothing. I can't control it. So, it just what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you still enjoy playing the game. How much longer do you want to play?
Well, like I said, I mean, I've been through some stuff, difficult situation with this team, you know, basically after having a so long career, successful career, you know, and to come over here and think I can at least play another 4 or 5 years because I don't have to, you know, play the outfield, so it will longer your career a little bit more, and to go through this situation where, you know, not much respect as the players that have a that have success, like great success in his career. Not just like success, but great success for years. You know, it's not. I'm not talking about 1 or 2 years.
Yep.
I'm talking about eight great years. You know, it's tough. You know, and you know, like I said early, physical, I'm great, but all those things, mental, it's crush you. You know what I'm saying? So, at some point, with all the situation, probably it just feel like, you know, I don't wanna go through this situation again. But at the other point, at the other time, at the other side, you know, you can never give up, and you can never let one people turn off your light for you. So I'm just gonna go up there and keep fighting, and hopefully I can get shot and play a couple more years.
Yeah, that's a great message. Don't let somebody tell you no, and that, let that be the end. And also, yeah. And also, don't give up because you know what you can do. And
of course,
yeah, you saying you're having a good season on the farm, and that I guess how much is another team or a change of teams? How much is that possible for you in the off season?
Yeah, it'll probably work. You know, I mean, like I said, you have players that it's not hitting. And they going up. You see them go up to the Ichigun. And you have a player playing well, swinging the bat well, and they just ignore you. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, it's one person. So never let one person turn your lights off. So if one person don't want you, probably it's more people out there that look at you and probably would love to have you. So.
Right. Now, when you did play on the top team, I know you hit a big home run. It was a milestone home run for you.
Yeah.
How did that whole home run feel, and what happened? What did the team do for you?
That's a good question. well, personal, for me personal, and I think for my teammates, that was a, you know, historic moment for me and for them, because they have been watching me play for a long time. And like for me to become the only foreigner that ever reached 300 homer, it's a big milestone for me, you know, and I feel so happy. It was a blast. But here we come where I tell you, don't let one people turn your lights off for you. That's what happened. They haven't shown no respect. They haven't shown anything that let me know to show that all my 9 years I have put in. And you know, you have to show some respect as a player. So they haven't do anything. They just sent out my trophy to my house. So. For first time, I feel so bad. I mean, I feel so horrible. Like, you know, like when I used to be with the Swallows, they used to do the memory day for you, a ceremony day, you know, everybody in front of the fans or the teammates and stuff, and give you your play, your trophy and all the stuff. In this case, they just sent my stuff home. So probably they don't even want to do that for me.
Wow. I guess you don't have the history with them, and maybe what do you think they feel about, maybe that's what they feel about it, right?
It doesn't matter, because I have seen players that I see Remy Chang play for most of his career for Yakult and the Giants, and when he went to the Bay Star, he reached 2008, and the Bay Star did something for him. I see other players that achieved their goals to a different team, and I see the different team do. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the history. It doesn't matter which team. It's just all that matters is respect and show, give the love, or at least let the player see that all the work he put in. He can see the value of it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Make him feel happy, like, yes, you know what I'm saying? Like, doesn't matter the team, it's just showing the respect for the work you have been put in for a long time, you know.
I gotcha. All right. Now, a lot of players have been going home or didn't come to Japan because of the COVID, you know, lockdown on family members and all that. How did that go for you and your family?
Well, you know, I came in later than normal. I used to come because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to stay home a couple, like 2 more months with my family. So there was a program already that probably they're going to let the family come in after Olympics. So it wasn't a big deal for me because it's already, I was home a couple extra months, and this was going to be only 4 months, then they could come here. So it's still hard, you know, but I knew after Olympic they was going to approve for family to come. So I was just trying to hang in there.
You knew that? How'd you know that?
Because it's, I've been in Japan for a long time, man. And, you know, the Olympic was going to be like a big game, a big thing here. So I guess the government, all they want to, you know, try to close the border and everything. They just want to do the Olympic. And then after the Olympic done, I mean, it's anything else to have. So then probably they don't care. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, because it's them through, like for 2 years, they never tried to make the family come. The Olympic finished, next day I get an email say, oh, we're going to start issue visa for family. So at the end of the day, it was all about the Olympic, you know what I'm saying? Because at least if you want to do it, you should just wait like 10 days or something and then send an email. Don't send an email right after the Olympics.
You know? Boy, you're going to be a politician when you finish, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes Japanese don't think the way they, you know, I mean, I don't know, but maybe we think different and we see the things different. Probably they don't see it that way.
No, maybe, definitely. We think differently for a lot of things. But anyway, all right, man. Well, we certainly appreciate your time and thank you for the candidness and openness. And we'll look for you. You know, hopefully we can see you playing soon. If not next year with the Hawks, somewhere else. Because I remember seeing that home run that you hit for your milestone, and it was huge and it was no joke. So we know you can still hit. So hopefully we can see you soon.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that too, and I hope so. I mean, like I said, it's not gonna be here, but I hope one of those other 11 team probably give me a shot, because I mean, I deserve to get out on the right way, you know. I'm saying, like, for all those things I have done, I deserve to leave and end my career on a good path, you know, not in this situation. So I hope so too, man.
All right, we'll talk to you next time.
All right, brother, appreciate it.
All right, man.
All right, wow. That's all I can say. I can tell you guys this. As soon as I got done with this interview, I sent the message to Jim. I said, Jim, I can't wait for you to hear this interview. So what'd you think?
We wouldn't tease it either.
No, I wouldn't. There's too much.
So I didn't get to hear it for about 2 days. So, it was, I don't know what I expected. I guess I expected something a little different, but I knew.
Not this, right?
Yeah, that was not exactly what I expected. But, you know, I kept hearing, you know, Rodney Dangerfield and Aretha Franklin. And you know what I'm talking about. Now I have to spell it like Aretha did.
Like Aretha did, yeah. Or pull out your collar when you say it like Rodney did.
Indeed. So, yeah, I think that's the one that I think the only thing that I really want to comment about. I'm going to have a lot more to say about it in the coming days. But I just want to say that I was quite surprised. I wasn't surprised by his response because, well, we've been talking to Coco for nine years now.
Yep.
So he's like the rest of us, only more so. And he's sensitive, and it really is as sensitive as you can be as a baseball player and still have the thick skin you need to be a baseball player. And it hurt. And respect for him, and we were talking before the show that Japanese teams often have these big events for players who are new. And he mentioned Alex Ramirez getting his, the Bay Stars celebrating his 2000th hit. And we've seen that over and over again in Japan. But normally it's kind of a, let's count down to 2000. Let's sell tickets as we count down to 2000. Let's sell merchandise as we count down to 2000. It's a marketing ploy as much as anything. When a team signs a guy on the cusp of 2000 hits, it's never about, what did you do for us? It's about what you can do for us at the, at the cash register. So that there's that. So the whole thing is weird because typically teams just they just like crank the money machine when they're in a situation. Although 300 home runs is not the big moneymaker like 2000 hits is,
right?
In Japan, if it was 500 home runs, maybe. But still, it's like a t-shirt day. Let's sell these t-shirts. People will buy them. Swallows fans would buy them. I'm just going to have surprised the Swallows aren't selling Vladimir Ballantyne 300 home run t-shirts. So, but for me, what it shows on the other side, on the flip side of that, the side that he talked about, the idea of respect, is the team should do something public regardless of how they feel about the player. Because of what he did and what he did for Japanese baseball and what Japanese baseball does for the SoftBank Hawks. They're an integral part of baseball in Japan. And he holds the single season home run record, shattering the one set by their chairman, Sadaharu Oh. It's not respect for Coco Ballantyne is going to be what it is, but respect for the game, dudes. This is a big deal in your game, in your business. And when you send the guy a trophy at home, you're like saying, well, people hitting 300 home runs is not a big deal. It's like, we don't care. That's, to me, the thing that really burns my butt.
Well, it's obviously burning at him as well. And to be honest, I don't think he's bashing the Hawks as a team. No. I think he's lighting up the decision makers and not necessarily the, obviously not the players or the coaches or anything. But I don't know. Some people might take this as the player who used to be on top not liking where he is. And I just don't see it that way because he's having the kind of season on the farm, 289. He's not playing a lot. I think the team is trying to look at younger players. He's got 21 hits and 9 of them are home runs. So he hasn't played in a heck of a lot of games, but they don't have as many games on the farm. So, he's not getting opportunities. That's, 88 at bats. So it's hard to really judge the numbers that he's putting up on the farm. But you hear him say, look, there are guys going up to the top team and they're not hitting as well as I am. So it's not a case of a player who's not performing. It's just, does this team really want me or not kind of a situation. And that's what I think is what we're hearing, as opposed to just, a player crying, give me some respect. I've got 300 home runs. It's not that simple, I don't think. And doing more for him once he hit that milestone Yeah, I could see that, but I could also understand the club's point of view, where in which this is not a player who's done a lot for us per se, and in fact he really hasn't done that much for us, and we'd like him to do more. But I mean, they didn't have anything ready to just do anyway, and he's right. Coco is right. When Ramitan did what he did, it was with, I mean, he had a huge milestone, and the Bay Stars danced around and yucked it up like it, he had been, he had hit most of, he had most of that production for that team. So this is the kind of disrespect I think imports receive in MPV. It's not, you know, it's just par for the course. And one of the players I remember, Alonzo Powell, our friend of the show, in his final year with the Dragons, was very unhappy with his usage that year. And he told me about it, and it was off the record. And I thought, well, yeah, I don't know. I thought about it when he told me, and I didn't know what the team was supposed to do. And it's hard for these teams to get over someone they're basically breaking up with, and do it lightly or gently. But obviously Coco has broken up with the Hawks. Emotionally, he has. He is already, you know, he called him Vay. He said, this is, you know, I'm basically not on the team next year, and this is it. He told us all those things. But this is a typical pattern of behavior that goes on with non-Japanese players in Japan. And, you know, it goes along with, for instance, not being, the team's not pushing a first year foreigner for Rookie of the Year, even though they could technically win the award, as we've talked about on the show in the past. Guys not being voted for the All-Star team because the players don't vote them in, and the fans don't vote them in, and some of the other players tend to overlook what they're doing in their contributions.
Well, so those to be fair, they no longer limit the number of import players on the All-Star game to 2.
That's nice.
There have been players. Yeah. I mean, there have been players who've been left off the All-Star team, even though they were voted in, because there used to be a limit on how many imported players could be on the All-Star game on the All-Star team. So.
Okay, but I know you. I think we talked about it before. I always said that the Japanese closers kind of tend to even fade away, and so do Japanese former hitting stars kind of fade away. They're allowed to be pinch hitters for a long time, and they would never send them down to the farm and tuck them away down there. They would give them at bats, and it just doesn't happen for non-Japanese players. And that's part of what goes on here. And just like living in Japan for, you know, you and me for more than half of our lives, it doesn't matter how long you've been here. If you're not Japanese, you're not Japanese, you know, that's the end. Mm. And you just get treated differently. But we're talking about the player who eclipsed O's coveted single season record, and not doing it with a club in a pennant race, but a cellar dwelling club that was like 45 or 50 games out of first. I mean, it was really, really hard for him to do that. And I just,
missing the first, I think, 19 games of the season.
So, you know, obviously it's a very difficult situation for both sides, but I, you know, if you were having an awful, awful, season on the farm and not very productive at all, I could even understand the team releasing him, but they're not releasing him, but they're not playing him. And it has to be very frustrating. And we heard that. This is probably the most explosive, well, it is the most explosive interview we've had on the show in our 11th season now. So I'm happy he told us, and I'm glad that we got the interview, and I hope it gets out there into the Japanese mainstream media, and we hear about it from SoftBank, and they actually either A, release him, or B, do something for him, because
well,
he certainly deserves it.
Well, they could release him at any time, to be honest, because
he doesn't count against the import quota as well.
He does not account against the import quota, and if he's released, he goes on waivers. Now, but they're not going to do it, because the worst thing they could do would be cut him and then have him hit 5 home runs in the pennant race against them, you know, for the Oryx Buffaloes. That would be a nightmare scenario. But they could, if they released him, here's the thing, if they released him, they'd essentially be paying most of his salary to play for somebody else. And it's not the money, you know, it's not like they would trade him. They couldn't just give his contract away or sell him because of the size of his contract. But although it's only a couple of months left, but no, that whole thing in Japan is we have to be careful in case the guy we don't think is any good is actually good.
Right. Or he might not be any good, but he can still rise up one day and do something on it and have a good day and beat us.
Sure.
You know, it could cost us.
Then people will say, well, what'd you do that for? But that partially explains why there's so few trades. Actually, we've seen a few trades of actually useful players this year. Mm. So things are changing. I suspect the attitudes as teams become more analytic focused, or at least that the more people in front offices are willing to listen to sort of balanced arguments. Instead of saying, well, we know he's had 5,000 at-bats on the farm team and he's an 0-50 hitter, but what if he hits a home run against us?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, you know, I did think about this as well, that the Hawks really have not been consistent in the scoring.
Mm.
They could actually use him, and they brought in this new player, Dariel Alvarez. I think you spoke about him last week as well. It doesn't seem to be early on in this small sample that we've had to watch him to be a great defensive player.
He's got a heck of an arm, though.
but yeah, it's overall defense. It's not just your arm. You gotta get to the ball first. But you know, I don't know if they had to go outside the organization to get a little bit of offense, but that's what they decided to do. So I totally understand where Coco's coming from in this situation. And divorces are hard. Let's put it that way. They're not easy. And now we're learning that this is definitely a divorce. It's just a matter of who's going to sign the paperwork first.
Yeah, I suspect so. I think there's lots of dynamics that we don't understand about why teams do things with players. But so one of the dynamics that with SoftBank in the past, and I don't know if it's still there, was the owner Masayoshi Son basically calling the front office and insisting that they offer big contracts to former big players. He insisted that when Hideki Matsui retired, that they should throw millions and millions of dollars at him. And the front office, general manager at the time, Itaro Kobayashi, says, like, we've got Nobuhiko Matsunaga. We've got like four guys who really can't play any position but first base, and can't play the outfield. They can't play first. They can barely play first base. What are we going to do with another guy who's basically a hitter who's, banged up and at the end of his career? It's like, but the owner, we have to do due diligence because the owner demands it. Mm. And as such, they ended up signing Daisuke Matsuzaka.
We'll get you one. Yeah, play with this for a while.
I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't the reason they got Vladimir Ballantyne. I think the reason they didn't get Hideki Matsui is because he said no, but they probably had to make him an offer.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about the Hawks then in general as we transition to talking about the Pacific League race. So we talked about them last week. Obviously, we've had players from the same team. I think this is the first time in JBW history that we've had players from the same team on back-to-back weeks. But hey, like I was telling someone on Twitter, we get the interviews when we get them, and can't always ask you listeners for questions and all those things because we got to go when the go sign goes on, and that's how it works. But we will talk about the Hawks a little bit this week. And again, they lost. They lost this series against the Buffaloes. They went head to head, had a chance to make up some ground or at least keep pace with the other teams. But the Buffaloes are in first place. And one thing I'd like to say about the race is that the Hawks don't seem to have the magic. Now, I don't know what the magic looks like. I know your San Francisco Giants have the magic because they've forgotten how to lose. But of course, you know, just like the drunks who seem to be dead on the trains at night and you want to go over and like poke them and see if they're alive.
I don't want to poke people. I don't want to poke them to see if they're alive for yourself.
But as soon as their stop comes, they pop up and get off the train and somehow get home, I assume. And guys like Alfredo Despaigne just seem to epitomize this kind of situation because he's the best example I can think of. He stumbles around through the regular season. He staggers with injuries. And then they prop him up at the plate in late season situations and meaningful games, and he beats people. And, you know, this is figuratively, not literally, of course, but he's beating people now. He didn't get all the job done today, but he just seems to get that on ball, and he's gone for most of the season. And that's the way the Hawks have basically four-peated in this run that they're on, or they had been on, let's say, because they're in fourth place right now. They're out of a playoff position. A playoff spot, but that's temporary. I think we're going to see a lot of jumbling and shuffling and jockeying and all that stuff as we go down the stretch. But the Marines, my pick as the upset Pacific League champion, that team is right there in second place. I like the results the team is getting. I just wish there was another real ace pitcher out there to carry that staff. I would comp them to the Swallows in the Central League right now because there's a lot of good offense and some decent defense, but no real mound presence to threaten other teams. But I did ask Jim to do an assignment this week, and I felt bad about doing it, but I knew he would like to because he likes to play with numbers. And I asked him to look at some of the projections for both leagues based on what we've seen so far. So what did you come up with as we talk about the Pacific League? Just the Pacific League right now.
Well, both leagues, but the Pacific League, we'll start with them. Basically, this is a real easy projection. Basically, it's going to assume we already know how many games teams have won and lost and tied. So we know how many are left. And so if we sort of make an estimate based on how often they score and allow runs, we can kind of guess where their winning percentage should be.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, teams that have been lucky in that respect, lucky in winning games, we don't expect that to continue moving forward the rest of the season. Lucky in terms of the number of wins they get for the number of runs they score and allow.
Sure.
Okay. So right now that projection has, and I'm not going to give you the wins and losses, and I didn't include ties in the projection, so everything's a win or a loss. Is the Buffaloes winning the Pacific League by, this is through Sunday's games, the Buffaloes winning the Pacific League by 3.5 games over the Marines.
Right. And we're, what, about 40 plus games, let's say?
Yeah, about.
Left for every team, yeah.
Right. And the Marines, wow, and then the Hawks in third place, making the playoff 6 games out, beating the Eagles to third place by a game.
Wow. So obviously none of us had the Buffaloes at the top, and they're the team that's just really kind of blowing everybody's predictions up, which is good. Yeah, I predicted a team would surprise us. I just maybe got the wrong one, but I'm not giving up. I really, like I said, I like where the Marines are. They just don't have the Yoshinobu Yamamoto presence on the mound. They don't have an Adam Jones who can do whatever, like get some starts here and there, come off the bench and get some key hits maybe, or just get them a really good at bat and maybe a productive out in a big situation or whatever it is. But they do have everything else. They have a lot of youth. They have energy. They have some players who are maybe punching above their weight, but you Mamune for one, who had a 3-hit game. Now I was assuming that it wasn't his first 3-hit game tonight because no one said it was. But I hadn't seen one from him.
Said in the Hero interview, I'm not really used to having them. So,
oh, okay. Well, I have to go back and I tend to shut the game off and go to the next one after the game's over.
Well, I was writing that story, so I stole stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I don't know. Nobody said anything, so I have to assume that he had one before a long time ago. But we've got strong leadership in Satoshi Nakajima, a great mixture of veteran steadiness and young energy and some power, some speed, pitching. It just looks like a championship team, and it's the time is right. The time is right, but games that they used to Buffalo away, they're not making mistakes. I can't even remember the last time they made a goofy play, and it doesn't even have to be an error where they didn't get a bunt down, they missed a sign that we could see, they did something. I can't remember the last game they just kind of blew. Do you?
No, and as I mentioned, we were talking on Friday, or I was tweeting on Friday, or we were chatting on Friday that the SoftBank Hawks were in Osaka this week, and they were like, "Well, we're Kyocera Dome. Let's play like the Buffaloes used to." And we had that. It's the second time.
That's not right.
Yeah, when in Osaka, do like the Buffaloes, and they were. No, but that's the thing. The Hawks have been having this sort of frenzied, we need to play better than we can. We need to be riskier than we are.
You're right. The Hawks are the team that is not getting down the bunt, is getting thrown out, making bad base running decisions. Catching balls, is not coming through late in games and not making simple plays. That's, you're right.
that play on Friday, the 2-5 to 3-5 double play.
Mm-hmm.
That I've never seen a sacrifice bunt with runners on first and second where both runners got thrown out at third base.
Yeah, or even tonight where you've got, unfortunately, is our guest from last week, and it was maybe bad communication, but you got your catcher and pitcher Carter Stewart Jr. bumping into each other trying to field a bunt. That is a Buffalonian thing to do.
Yeah, that was a shame because he actually pitched quite well. And, that was like the one he got burned, he had burned. That happened. He ran into Kai, and he shouldn't have run into Kai because Kai was going to make the play.
Well, the guys on the former catcher, the former Bay Stars manager
and Yakult catcher. Okay.
And Yakult catcher. Yes. Akinobu Oya said that Kai went too far, that he shouldn't have gone out there, that he wasn't going to be able to make the play. So it's up to debate maybe, but they ran into each other. Maybe it was a communication thing. Either way it happened, that's the Buffalonian thing to do, and that's what the Hawks have been doing.
Yeah.
And I think they can right the ship. They still have time, obviously, but
what else did we see this week?
Teams have switched.
What else did we see? The Hawks, that was the Giants who did one of those things during the week. The Giants had one of those moments. Manager Tatsunori Hara had one of those moments, or was that the week before, where he switched pitchers in the middle of an at-bat?
And then
the game blew up on him. Well, that was sort of what happened because, and the next batter sacrifices. And so they have a runner, they have two outs and a runner on second base. And it's like, this is like no big deal. And then what happens is Shuhei Fukuda just gets a really good swing on a really good pitch. I mean, he does a good job with a very hard, low fastball. And the first base goes under the first baseman's glove, and he's a good first baseman, Akira Nakamura. So it's like everything was it was almost like someone's telling the SoftBank Hawks the gods hate them.
Well, they not hate the gods. I think it's the rest of the Pacific League. So it's not the
well, I know some
they're
fans.
Tired of them beating.
Yeah,
their heads in,
but it's of course there's. It's not like there aren't reasons why they think they need to play better. And I think the biggest reason for that is they're now working on who's going to be their number four closer, because their number one closer Yuito Mori hasn't been seen since May.
I heard them mention his name. Yeah, but that's about it. So.
He's got inflammation in his, or he's got discomfort in his left arm, which is his non-pitching arm. his left elbow, and he's been out for most of the season. And then Levon Moinello, I don't know what the story is on him, but he came back briefly and he's been hurt. And then Shohei Iwasaki, who was bounced back from surgery and who was looking pretty good
for a while. Yeah.
And then he got lit troubles. Up. He started getting lit up during the week. And then they examined him on the weekend and says, oh, you know, he's got an arm injury.
He does now. After giving up all those.
Well, that's
it. Probably does.
That's an ERA injury, I think. Yeah. Sorry, your ERA is inflamed, the MRI says.
Well, let's make a two-seam transition then and talk about the Central League race. Now, for me, the Giants, you know, and we didn't hear from Giants fans on Show Nakata, and I don't know if that's because you guys had nothing to say about it, if you just don't want people to know that you're Giants fans, if you just don't want to send an email, but we want to hear from you because I really want to know how you're feeling about Shohei Nakata joining your team. But he's not doing anything. I really didn't expect him to do anything. He's in the midst of a struggling season. Now, whether that's because he's having – sometimes just players just don't have good season. It just happens. I don't – you know, those balls that used to – that fell in the previous year don't fall in, or the balls that went out – he's just missing them. Whatever the reason, he's just not having a good year. So I didn't expect it to get better just because he's going to Central League, a place where he doesn't know as much about the pitchers. But anyway, the Tigers are the story right now. They're struggling. They're not handling the ball well in the field. I don't know any other way to put it. I talked earlier this season about the fact that I don't put that much stock in the errors, but now the errors are starting to be this, you know, it used to be a little zit on the side of their face, and now it's a big red one on the front of their nose, and it's full of pus and ready to pop. This is ugly. They're awful defensively, and they look like they're teenagers on defense because they're unpredictable and often unreliable. Whenever a ball is hit now, I start thinking, okay, who's going to either juggle it, fumble it, throw it away, or not catch it in the first place. And they fell into third place tonight. I think I mentioned that. It's their first time to be out of first place since April 3rd. And I don't like what I'm seeing. We got Yuki Nishi, who's on the verge of 100 career wins, and he's on a losing skid to, you know, he's on the kind of skid where, you know, when a batter is in a slump, it seems like they go up there and the first thing they have is two strikes on him. And it's like Nishi goes out to the mound and there's already two runs on the board.
Well, he's,
you know, before he even throws a pitch.
Well, you know, when he pitched for Oryx, he was famous for having, you know, he'd have an 8-game winning streak and then he'd have a 9-game losing streak. And I think he had a, you know, a big winning season, and now he's going to have a big losing season. Maybe he's evening things out, you know, even making the waves bigger. I don't know. It like waves.
Yeah. I don't know either, but it doesn't look good. And it has to be. It has to drive Tigers fans nutty, because that was one of the things we talked about, how their pitching was going to be good. But no pitcher can be really good when they're having to deal with four outs an inning. And that's just the way it is. I mean, a couple of the situations I saw is like guys, and it's not just the errors, because there was a ball tonight that Mel Rojas Jr., and I know the ball was hit hard, but against the Carp, he just didn't catch it. I don't know that any of the guys they usually put out there in left field would have caught it. So that's a problem. And if I were manager Akihiro Yano, I would just say, you know what? We're not scoring runs anyway. Let's just opt for defense, because we need to make plays and get our pitchers off the field as quickly as possible. And so let's just opt for the better defensive players anyway. Maybe we can scramble up some offense, maybe a couple runs. If we play better defense, we're going to be in the game, because our pitchers don't give up that many home runs anyway. What else can they do? They can't change out all the personnel, so they've got to do something. But this has to stop. Don't stop putting guys out of position. Put them in their best positions defensively, and just work your lineup somehow so that you can get around those things, and then pinch hit when you need to. And you can't keep losing games this way. You are going to tear the team apart just because it's losing games that are winnable.
I have to ask, was our podcast sponsored this week by Daily Sports?
Was it? I don't know. What did Daily Sports say?
Well, they're the Tigers' sort of flagship newspaper. And
what did they say?
Going bad. Well, no, I'm not saying that they're picking on the errors, but basically, you know, they go around from coach to from the manager, you know, who can we throw under the bus today? And, you know, it's and when the Tigers, I mean, that was, you know, that was Matt Mertens' famous line. I said, whether I do good or bad, I know I'm going to be on the front page of the paper tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I remember saying that.
Because if he did badly, he was the first guy under the bus. You know, that was just the routine. That's part of being the Tigers is who's going to be sacred, you know. So they've been living kind of a charmed existence, but that's, I get the feeling that's about to end, that pretty much the knives are going to be sharpened, that, and this is something that I was very disappointed in Tomoaki Kanemoto, the previous manager, because it looked like he was going to be the guy. Akinobu Okada was the guy who basically took the Tigers reporter's questions and kind of smiled and said, no, take that somewhere else. Take that, you know, and just sit on it because I'm not going to throw my guys under the bus. And it's a lot of pressure because finding a scapegoat is kind of like, you know, it's like what the Tigers do, you know, they disappoint you. I'm sorry, Tigers fans, but you know, they have all these great players in the minors and they add them to the first team with an IV drip.
Yikes.
And then wash them off with a saline solution. You know, who's next? And you see all these great guys just sort of like never develop, or, you know, today's hero is tomorrow's goon. And they're just
not goat.
Yeah, goat, sure. But no, it's like it's finding a scapegoat is really important. Having an excuse for why the season went south is really important for the Tigers. And they've been, you know, when you're in first place and, you know, and you still got a chance and they turn it around and it'll, you know, they've got a little room for margin for error. And I'm thinking Akihiro Yano, the manager, is the guy who's not going to give in to that. He's a real tough guy. Kanemoto was a tough guy, but he didn't want to be the manager. Well, neither one of these guys wanted to be manager. But I'm hoping that he can be the guy to just tell the reporters, no, we're a team. Nobody's, you know, we win and lose as a team. There's nobody whose fault it is.
Yeah,
it's my fault. You know, it's my fault. Blame me. Which they won't.
Won't hesitate. Yeah, they'll be all over that.
They threw, you know, Yuta Kawada and Akinobu Mayumi were both, you know, they had a target on their back from day one. So
enough about the Tigers.
Yes.
Meanwhile, these Swallows, these second place Swallows now, as of tonight, have one pitcher, I think, who profiles as a frontline starter who I think the team would like to see step forward as long as Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa is not around.
Right. He hasn't been, he's been down with the COVID, yeah.
Right. And that's the rookie
Yasunobu Okugawa.
Yasunobu Okugawa. And I think they were trying to get a little bit too much out of him the other night when he pitched and ended up giving up back-to-back-to-back home runs against the Bay Stars. That was unfortunate. Unfortunate loss, obviously, but I still like what I'm seeing from this team. Mm-hmm. It's just that, I think in that case, it was the seventh inning that he pitched into, and it wasn't that he had thrown too many pitches. He was 93 pitches. He was in the seventh inning, so it's not like you could expect him to fall apart, and he didn't really fall apart. I think they just kind of got used to what he was throwing and they were sitting on some pitches, especially Neftali Soto was waiting for a fastball. He got it inside part of the plate, and he rocked it almost off the back wall at Tokyo Dome. But I think they're looking toward the playoffs now and they're trying to figure out, okay, can we get three guys to start in this first round? Maybe if we don't have to play the first round, that'd be even better. But if we have to play, whenever we play, we want to get three starters ready. And so I think Okugawa maybe profiles as a guy they could probably get a really quality start, a quality playoff start, whether it's six innings, around six innings, you know, six plus. And I think that's why they're sending him out there, and they want him to be ready for these games. He's young. You know, he hasn't thrown all that much. He should be ready to step up, I think. And then obviously Cy Snead threw the other night. He was pitching well until he got bitten by a long ball bug, if there is such a thing. What are your projections say about the Central League?
I have the Giants winning by a half game, with the Swallows and Tigers both a half game out of first place. With the
just
Swallows
a half game out.
Yep.
Oh, that would be such an awesome race. Can you just program your machine to make that happen in real life?
Dude, I can't program my machine to remind me to do stuff. that's just based on their performance so far. But I do like what I've seen from the Swallows. What I like from the Swallows, and I'll say it again, is I like the pitchers are doing. You know, they're willing to get beaten in the zone, to get ahead in counts, and to give their fielders a chance to catch the ball. And I've seen this in a couple of pitchers. I mean, you know, when it's not working, you'll have a guy who'll be like, no walks, but nine hits in six innings.
Right. I know that guy.
Yeah, there's a few of them. And it's usually because they've got nothing, or they can't locate. You know, it's like usually the case of they can't locate the pitches, so they've got to throw everything dead center and hope it finds a strike zone. And mm-hmm. it's got nothing on it. Mm-hmm. But I see guys basically, I'm going to try to throw a strike, but I'm going to put the best pitch I can in the strike zone.
Sure.
And I see it's more of a sense I have of watching a lot of the Swallows relievers, but the starters as well, even Masanori Ishikawa, who, you know, a couple of years ago we thought he'd be retired by now, but he's going up there and he's challenging guys in the strikes. And as I mentioned before, the Swallows are pitching like a Pacific League team, much more trying to dominate the strike zone. And so I do like that. Cy Snead was a little bit above his norm the other day on Saturday. His fastball velocity was better. I thought his command was excellent. But he did miss a couple of pitches in the zone, and that hurt him, but looked really good. I think he'll be one of the guys. Keiji Takahashi I've liked a lot. So if they had to go with those three guys and Okugawa, that would be, you know, I think they're willing, the Swallows are willing to say, if you're on the team, you're good enough to play. And if you're good enough to play, then you're good enough to compete. If we think you're good enough, go and compete, and we're not going to worry about, the unlucky things that happen. Go up,
all right.
And that's sort of the vibe I get from the Swallows. The okay. offense is a little hit and miss, but
that's isn't everybody's? Yeah,
yeah. So the funny thing, the Giants are weird, but as long as we're talking about the Central League, the Giants had to. And I've mentioned this before, is that Thiago Vieira, just what a success story, because they took this guy who basically had to be instructed what home plate in a strike zone was.
And they had to show him on a GPS, because when he was on the mound, he had no idea where it was.
Yeah, this is it's not towards center field. And it's like the balls were everywhere. There's no control, but his secondary pitches have become good. He's had games where he's just been, he's been throwing the slider and he's been throwing it for strikes. And I'm going, oh, man. And he set the Japan speed record with 166 kilometers per hour. And he's now passed the infamous Kyosuke Takagi with the record for the most consecutive pitching appearances by a Yomiuri Giants pitcher. Scoreless pitching appearances by Yomiuri.
Yeah, I was thinking about that today. I was listening on the radio at the time. Somebody was talking about it, and I said, "My goodness, they've created a monster that the big league teams are now going to want because this is what they wanted from this guy. So maybe this is what they.
Yeah, I know. They'll be like, thanks for the work. You know.
Yeah. See you guys.
That's going to, you know, he's going to be a hard guy to keep.
Yeah. So, he might have pitched his way out of Japan.
Lots of interesting things going on. And it's going to be fun. I mean, I guess it's really fun because the three right now, the top three teams are all within a game.
Yeah, it's outstanding. I love it. You know, I love, my wish is always for these things to go down to the last pitch of the season. So
I'll be remiss if I don't mention the game Tyler Austin had on Saturday.
Oh yeah. Especially that throw. He made at the third base.
Yeah. No, he,
that's ridiculous.
He nailed two guys at third base on Saturday. Basically the Swallows and Bay Stars tied 2-2. He went over 4 at the plate, but threw 2 strikes, and they were basically ruined 1 inning and ended the 9th inning with 2. And they were beginning to, the Swallows were beginning to really tag Kazuki Mishima. Mm-hmm. And it's like 2 line drives, hammered. He was missing. He started the inning really sharp, and then he started missing in the zone. And they were hammering him, and the pinch runner decided, well, I can go to third.
Yeah. And, well, on another day.
Yeah. Another day, buddy. An alternate universe. So, yeah, credit to Tyler Austin for that. Another guy who's, I think, probably not going to be, well, DeNA's got money, but they're going to have to make him a really sweet offer to stay in Japan. Because I think somebody's going to offer him a guaranteed contract next year.
All right. Well, we got more to talk about. So we making do? A four-seam transition. We have a player coming up on 2,000 hits, and that's Takumi Kuriyama of the Sable Lions. And the thing I remember most about him is that he was a second-year player, but essentially a rookie in 2005 when I started this gig at the Yomiuri. And I saw him playing on opening day because I got sent out to Cebu to watch the first game of the Oryx Buffaloes.
I remember that.
Yeah. And I said, this is an interesting outfielder. He's spry. He's looks like he moves well, but doesn't have a lot of power or anything. I never expected that this guy would still be playing at the level that he's playing in 2020, let alone 2021. And now we're looking at a 2,000 hit player. He's 4 shy of 2,000. He had a hit today. So just needs 4 more hits. And as athletic and as well as he moved as a young player, he's not that anymore. And I don't think he has ever really been a great hitter. He has really been a thinking man's hitter in the batter's box to me. And I would say a lot of pitchers probably often thought that they could get him out with stuff, but they weren't going to outsmart him. And the longer he has played, the fewer times you can outsmart him. I think as a pitcher, obviously I don't face him, but it just seems like when he gets in hitting situation in favorable counts or even, unfavorable counts, you have to not only outsmart him, but you have to make your pitch too. And maybe that's not always the case for some guys because you can just get him out with stuff. Not this guy. He's no 400 hitter. I think career-wise, he's 280-ish hitter. So I would say he's not a Hall of Famer. We always talk about this, and we'll probably talk about him next week because the pace that he's at, he'll be at 2,000 by the time we pick up the mics next week. But not a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, but a really, really good player, really good hitter. And his career's not over, so I don't want to act like he can't maybe reach the Hall of Fame or earn some credit toward the Hall of Fame. But I just don't see him as a Hall of Fame player.
I don't see it happening just because, first of all, he's the kind of player who he hit 30-plus doubles a year, and he'd get 5 triples a year, and he'd steal in the 3 years when before his wheels went and before his arm went. He was, before Shogo Akiyama came in after Kuriyama's arm and wheels went, because Kuriyama was the center fielder.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a really good, outfielder, and he was I just want to get this he was, but the perception of him was at the end of the season when all the dust was cleared, he won 4 Best Nine awards.
Mm.
But it wasn't until 2010, excuse me, I take that back. It wasn't until 2016 that he made his first All-Star game.
Yeah.
He was the guy who did everything. He was never, you know, he wasn't the average guy. He wasn't the massive on-base percentage guy. He wasn't the massive slugging guy. You know, the 10 home runs, the 15 steals, the 5 triples, the 50 walks. He was like the B-plus player in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he did only
C-plus to B-plus. What? C-plus to B-plus.
Well, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, not in the power, but he was just really good at pretty much everything.
Everything, yeah.
Well above that. I mean, he was above average in everything for sure. And my first memory of him was that I saw the day that he became a regular, which was when the Lions played in the Rockton Eagles home opening series in April 2005. He'd play one game in 2004. And then 2005, the Lions were playing at the Rockton Eagles in Sendai. And Tomoki Sato, their right fielder, broke his leg trying to catch a ball in foul territory against the field seats there because they jut out right close to right field. And they called up Kuriyama the next day, and he was a starter for like the next 10 years.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking the other day too that his Central League twin is Norichika Aoki. What do you think about that? I think Aoki was born almost a year before Kuriyama, but same kind of hitter with a little bit of pop. Defense was good early on, but not as good these days. That happens over time.
Not quite, because Aoki was the high average guy.
Well, I mean, Kuriyama has he's got a hits title in there once. He's got a gold glove once. I mean, I don't know. I said comp. I didn't say comp. I said twin, didn't I? All right, comp. How about comp?
The guy who I compared more to is Yoshiki Kame, but
Kame didn't play.
He was never a regular. He was always a part-timer because the Giants.
Just say yes, John, you're right. Move on. Why you always got to be disagreeing with me?
Yes, John, you're right. Let's move on.
Okay. Let's rock with Roki. Roki Sasaki of the Lotte Marines got a start on Saturday. And he was up in Tohoku. I think it's near. Where's his hometown exactly?
His hometown is in the neighboring prefecture, Iwate. I don't know where it is exactly, but it's on the coast.
It's in Tohoku, yeah.
And
so he was pitching up in that area for the first time as a pro. And no runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, 83 pitches. He went 5 innings. He gets the win up there, and I think he topped out at about,
156.
Okay, I'd seen 154. But it's obvious they want him to be a pitcher and not a thrower. But I really think sometimes he just needs to dial it up. And he did a couple times, and he can make some guys look stupid. And he did, in a couple of instances. And I just don't know. I obviously, they're getting him ready for next year. The kid gloves are on him. They want him to be this, that, and the other. Everything is about let's do this. Let's take it easy. Let's be a pitcher. But sometimes he needs to be a thrower, in my opinion, because these batters can catch up with these average fastballs. And maybe his is above average, but they can still catch up with him. So
the velocity is above average, but the spin is inconsistent. I mean, you can tell when his spin axis is really good and he's throwing over 150, they're missing the ball by about 2 or 3 inches. They're swinging under that thing. But most of the time it isn't. That's the big thing. The good thing, however, the other day, what was good was he just delighted. He's got a pretty good splitter right now. And I think he's just delighting and tormenting people with it. It's like, fastball, fastball. Okay, that was the last one you're going to see of those. Look for the fastball. Here comes the split. And they were missing that like awfully. And I think he was just digging it. So I think he is coming along. I think it's a step by step. You know, they're trying to build it one thing at a time. I don't know about your qualifications as, you know, what's the best device.
I know.
Advice to develop pitchers. I mean, I don't know you're wrong. I don't know you're right.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I just know what I want to see.
Okay. Okay. Good point. Yeah. I mean, of course, I'd like to see him hit 100 miles an hour with his fastball, but I think the priority is, you know, but the five scoreless innings was the first scoreless appearance he's had on the first team. So credit to that. I did like when the post-game hero interview, which is when you're the visiting team, you only get one player. And the reporter tried to milk some, oh, you're playing in Tohoku, how does it feel? Says, I'm happy we won.
Thank you very much.
Well, because it's a, you know, it's a story. I mean, his father died in the March 11th, 2011 tsunami. And, you know, it's an emotional thing. And I think he's just kind of tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, certainly. I'll watch for spin and all that other stuff. But I do want to see him dominate the strike zone because I really think he can.
He can. I mean, sometimes his fastball's hopping, but it'll be hopping one pitch and it'll be off the next. So.
Okay. All right.
When it's on, when it's straight, you know, it's just a matter of guys looking for a fastball and, you know, and timing it.
Yeah. And of course, as the pitch turns, Masahiro Tanaka also had a star. Oh, by the way, so the Marines won that game 5-1 on Saturday, and Masahiro Tanaka is still 4-5, and he pitched on Friday. The Marines and the Eagles playing a big series for them, and the Marines swept it, and they got through all those tough pitchers. So that was, I say all those, but there were two. Takayuki Kishi and Masahiro Tanaka, that was a tough matchup, but the Marines came out, they swept. But anyway, Masahiro Tanaka, he's, like I said, 4-5. He's still a losing pitcher. Seven innings pitched, five hits, a run, three walks, four strikeouts, allowed a home run. That was the only run. It's unfortunate. That's what I predicted in the PL prediction show. I said sometimes they're just going to run dry with the offense, and they just really have in this whole series, but they're fighting. I you know, they're the team that I didn't expect to be in this top three was the Buffalo. So they're messing up my prediction. The Buffaloes are, but I'm fine with that. I don't know that the Eagles, if it comes down to the Eagles and the Hawks, I don't know which team to go with. I guess you go with the team with the best pitching and defense. And at the moment,
the Eagles have the Hawks have the best defense. I think
I would love to say that because it's overall, but we don't know who's going to be healthy and who's going to be playing, you know, who's even going to be in the lineup at the time when they need to play good defense.
As I mentioned, of course, the Hawks are now on their fourth closer, but the Eagles are on their second because Yuki Matsui's out and he's not going to be back for a month.
Yeah. So anyway, Tanaka, he didn't seem to have good stuff the other night, and I've been watching what you said about his fastball, and you know, a couple. I think that's what he gave the home run up on a fastball.
But I think it was a two seamer actually, but yeah.
Okay, well, two seam fastball, but yeah, not a four seamer, but he just doesn't seem to want to throw it in the strike zone. You know, he wants to tease the zone with it and get people to, if they're going to get themselves out. Fine. If not, he'll come into the zone with sliders and forkballs.
Yeah, pretty much sliders. Now he'll throw the fastball in the zone, but he likes to keep it on the edge. And that was his problem last week when, you know, he threw it on the edge and the umpire saying, no, it's not a strike. Okay, I'll throw another one. They'll give you another look. And so this time it wasn't that problem, but this time it was it's the old problem, which is, he's getting by. He's making most of his pitches. I mean, he's not making a lot of mistakes, but he's working really carefully, and he's his run support this year is about 2.8 runs per nine innings when he's in the game.
That's not going to get you a bowl of ramen.
And the Eagles have scored 3.8 runs a game overall. They just don't score when he pitches. And the last six, the last five starts, all quality starts, he's won. He's got a 1.85 ERA.
1.85, yeah.
1.85, and he's 1-1.
Sad. And that's why I was saying that, that the fact that he was able to string all those wins together in 2013 was just, it was incredible. But part of it, I made sure to make note of it at that time, was the fact that he was not facing aces and that his team was scoring in many of those games. And I went through start by start and talked about some of the pitchers that the Eagles were facing. Now, they had a better offense at that time as well. So it's not, I'm not really comparing. I'm just saying it's hard to win games unless you score runs, no matter how well you pitch. And even if you put up a quality start, you don't get the W.
Sometimes. Oh, he's the Friday guy now.
Loss. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Again, we've got to move on. But, yeah, he did well. You and I both had some frustrations as we make a seamless transition here and talk about the obstruction of justice. I loved your little headline headline on your blog post.
And, oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was screaming. I vented about replay earlier in the season. I think the players are frustrated too, but we need intervention here. We need the league office to step in. We do. We need to get all these umpires in a room and say, you're going to rehab. You know, you're going to ego rehab.
Hashtag hi.
We're going to sit you down. We're going to put your egos over here. You got to leave them here and check them in when you come into rehabs. And you don't get them back until you know how to use them. Because obviously they've been abusing them. Because we saw a couple plays here where it was obvious the catchers, as I said, they were crouching on the plate, looking like a dog about to relieve itself. And we got players coming in with no place to slide. No recourse for their act for getting out of the way and avoiding a collision, and managers say, oh, well, that's a collision rule situation. Let's have a replay. And the umpires go into their little booth and they have a cup of coffee, snack on a sandwich, and they come out and say, no, we're not going to overturn it. This is a problem because I used to know what the rule was and I know what the rule states, and that's not what I'm seeing in terms of interpretation on the field. What's going on, Jim? Obstruction of justice.
Well, it's the umpires. Here's the thing, because the rule is you can't be in the baseline. You can't be in the baseline if a runner's approaching and you don't have the ball.
Yeah, you can't be standing on the base either.
You cannot. And here's the home plate is, you know, and the rules say this very clearly. Home plate is no different from any other base. So imagine, and I guess the analogy is, imagine if you're a first baseman and you get a pickoff throw and you just decide to stand between the base and the runner. What's the umpire going to do? No, I mean, no, stand between him, block. Yeah, block him. Keep him from touching the base and then tagging him out.
Yeah, well, there were two instances I saw plays where the catchers were literally on the plate. And that's like Shaquille O'Neal. You know, yeah. Post it up on your
home
plate.
That used to be expected, and I think the umpires are still saying the umpires are hardwired to rule the tag was made, although in Friday Takuya Kai, I'm not certain the tag was made.
Made, that was another thing, and I don't think they even looked for that.
Well, you could look at Oryx, but they're looking at a 1988 family computer Super Mario monitor. So they probably couldn't tell. I mean, that's the park where they
with the sound on,
where they ruled a foul home run was fair that cost the Buffaloes a game.
Well, I remember, years back when we talked to Casey McGee and he talked about losing games on technicalities, blah, blah, blah. But this is just inconsistent, and that's all I'm asking for is for you guys, for the umpires to be consistent.
Yeah,
we're not getting that.
I mean, MLB, the catcher is actually, if you have the ball, you're allowed to be in the baseline if you want. You can block off the plate if you have the ball. But if you, in Japan, the catcher is not allowed to be in the baseline with the ball, period.
Right.
You have to give the runner a lane.
And there were no lanes given.
There was no lanes. On Friday, I don't remember who the runner was. It was Nishimura of the Buffaloes, I think. And he slid into Takuya Kai's foot, which was in front of the plate. And then Kai tagged him out. And I'm going, well, that's pretty clear.
I had the volume up. I said, well, they're going to overturn this. And they came out and made the safe sign. And I'm like, what is going on here?
And Saturday, Ginjiro Sumitani was blocking the base. Yeah, of the Eagles was blocking the base without the ball. He got the ball in plenty of time, about five or six, and the runner's a few steps away. But then he not only didn't give him a lane, but when the runner went out, left the baseline to try to get around him, Sumitomi pivoted to make sure there was no way for him to go. And there was a collision. I mean, they did collide.
Yeah, it's
the
crazy.
Rule is we're not going to allow collisions because we're not. And then the umpire said, oh, he tagged him out.
Yeah. Yeah. So. In this same season, the Chunichi Dragons lost a game to the Lotte Marines where they thought they had thrown a player out at the plate and clearly tagged him. And their catcher was called for having a toenail in the base path. Takuya Kinoshita, maybe right. A toenail in the base path and was ruled out. And it was ridiculous. I'm exaggerating, yeah. Of course.
We've seen a few of those, but generally it's the umpires, crazy. And they will almost never call. They pretty much never call a play.
This one was reversed.
Obstruction.
They reversed it. Yeah, right. they reversed the call to make the guy safe, and the Dragons ended up with a tie. But
well, that happens. That happens. Yeah. Sometimes they'll see it on a video, but you never see it in. I mean, and it's obvious that it's obstruction, but the umpires just aren't wired that way. And of course, my solution is tell the umpires to think of it like third base. You know? Oh, it's okay. We can
you
just
had me to tell the umpires to think.
Okay, yeah, let's not go. That might be too big of a challenge. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. All right, a few really quick notes because we got to get out of here. Chris Johnson officially retired a couple weeks ago. We missed a chance to talk about that, and hopefully we can get him on the show at some point. Chris Johnson, former Cubs pitcher. Haruki Nishikawa of the Fighters stole base number 300. He's in an exclusive club in NPB. And Diane Viciedo hit a couple singles the other day to knock in four runs, and now he has the most RBIs as a foreign Dragons player of all time. He passed Leos Gomez with his 450th RBIs that day.
Wow. So,
awesome stuff. Like I said, we could do a show every day at this point because there's so much going on in baseball, but we've got Paralympics. We've got other things going on. We've got and Major League
Baseball. John actually has a life, so.
So they say. So I've heard. Anyway, I'm going to congratulate your San Francisco Giants now because they don't lose. So awesome. I can't wait for the playoffs. I think that's when it's all going to get decided anyway. All right, people, we will talk to you next week. Remember, if you have any questions, which we didn't have this week, or comments, which we didn't have this week, hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag #HighHeat. Send questions, of course, MP3s, which we didn't have. We haven't had in a while. Via email. Do I sound like I'm complaining? I'm not complaining. Send via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com and hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. And I know for a fact that Jim has an event tomorrow.
Today? Yep, 11 a.m. in Japan time. If you're a subscriber, you'll get it. You'll get the notification in the mail shortly. And with the Zoom link. So stay tuned. I'm going to be doing more live chats. Leon Lee is up this week, and we'll see who's going to come next.
All right, folks, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at jballallen.com and the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at @JBWPodcast and at @JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with #HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.